Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:20 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 12th. And we had another sell-off in here today. The market was down almost 10%. These are extraordinary times, but I think it's particularly relevant to look at the commonality in the declines between bonds and equities, because it's out of character. During other medium-term moves we've had, we've generally seen that bonds tend to go up when equities go down. But what we're seeing right now is there is weakness in bond markets and weakness concurrently in equity markets. So, for example, we've seen that the earlier move in yields, which was for compression in here today, was reversed by the end of the session. When we then look at the futures on the Treasury future, it has completely unwound the earlier advance. I think it's quite likely we've seen a peak of at least near-term and potentially medium-term significance for Treasuries. That is something that is not priced into the bond markets right now. When we look at the performance of risk parity, I think there are a couple of points that are worth paying attention to. The first is that it has been an incredibly impressive performer over the course of the last couple of decades. And when we go back and look at the size of the pullback that it had in 2008, which was associated with a massive freezing up of the credit markets, well, the size of the move we're getting right now is in fact faster than the last part of the crash. It is actually quite unusual to have such a very swift move off of an all-time peak, but that's what we're getting. And it is in part reflected by the very steep decline we've seen in the equity markets, but also by the fact that bond prices have stopped rallying. Now, when we think about what are the potential reasons for why that might be the case, what is it that could create an environment where bond prices and equity prices fall together? Because there's historically been an inverse relationship between the two, on which the risk parity strategy, which tends to be levered, really does rely on. Well, one would be inflation. If inflation started to really become an issue, it would certainly hit the bond markets, but it would also weigh on some of the equities. So there is that potential, but that is not what I think investors are worried about today. But the issue that I think markets have to come to grips with is that it is certainly not the only potential outcome. The much bigger potential risk is solvency or liquidity. Well, the Federal Reserve is quite likely to increase the size of its balance sheet very substantially. It's up to 4.2 trillion now. The peak was around 4.5 trillion. I think it is very likely that it is going to go to at least 6 trillion and potentially more than that in order to combat the liquidity crisis that is evolving now. They are also becoming increasingly active in the repo market. The primary reason for demand in the repo market is we had a foretaste of the liquidity issues in the repo market back in October. That was in response to the fact that the Federal Reserve had been reducing the size of their balance sheet, that the federal government is running substantial deficits, and that they were withdrawing liquidity from the market, and that we've had much tighter regulation of the financial sector, so banks are no longer as active in the repo market as they once were. That necessitated that the Federal Reserve become active in the repo market and act as both a source of first call and last call for liquidity. So that's where we were back in the third quarter of last year. Since then, the situation has evolved considerably, and now the reality, although it has not yet been stated officially, is that the Federal Reserve has got a standing repo facility, and they are now backstopping the repo market because there is literally nobody else who can do that. What it essentially means is that the Federal Reserve is now backstopping the entire global financial sector, and that leaves it open to unlimited liability. This is something, again, that is, I think, underappreciated by markets. The capacity for the Federal Reserve's balance sheet to expand is now unlimited. It means that that $6 trillion is a conservative estimate of how large the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is likely to go. Sequoia Asset Management moved last week to advise all its partner companies to hoard cash and to cut back on spending. Yesterday, Blackstone and Carlyle Group, they both gave similar advice to their partner companies. Boeing has drawn down a full $13.8 billion credit line, and the share, it had Type 3 top formation characteristics before it broke down from the 300 level, and it is quickly unwinding all of its bull market advance, and I think that it is quite likely the company is going to require a bailout before it in fact reaches bottom. We've seen that Hilton Hotels has also decided that they are going to draw down on their revolving credit lines, and the share there is also down significantly, although it was off its lows in here today. We also saw that yesterday a number of the airlines were able to source capital from their own revolving credit lines, but the problem is that the banking sector makes these lines of credit available in order to try and win business and to cement relationships. They don't plan for these credit lines to be drawn on all at once. And that is going to create a liquidity issue for a number of banks. They're not liquid enough to have this kind of draw on their resources. So banks are down approximately 43% in just this year alone in the USA. But it is worth reminding ourselves that the US banks are among the best capitalized internationally, and that the global banking sector is significantly weaker. Now we're seeing a meaningful breakdown in the regional banking sector. So we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend back in 2018. It never recovered. And now we're getting the breakdown. Type 2 top formation completion in dynamic fashion. And it is clearly accelerating on the downside. Now, of course, accelerations are endings. And the amount of negative news that is being priced in here is really quite acute. In order for the massive accelerations that we've seen over the last 3 weeks to persist, we would have to see that the news is getting progressively worse. Unfortunately, the coronavirus news is getting progressively worse. So that continues to put downward pressure on the banking sector. But again, the most important point here is that the European banking sector was weak to begin with, and now it is accelerating on the downside. Christine Lagarde, as the head of the ECB, had an opportunity today to say that the ECB was willing to do whatever it took in order to support the European financial system. Instead, she said it's not their job to try and compress spreads. Well, obviously, the stock market took that and decided that it was time to sell. And the bond market is looking at the Italian 10-year as rather richly valued if the ECB isn't willing to step in an aggressive manner and to start buying those bonds. The euro today, as a result, was a little steadier because there is the potential, at least, that the ECB is trying to rough arm the European governments into embarking on fiscal stimulus. They have been intransigent to the ECB's calls for fiscal stimulus over the course of the last decade. They may be using this as an opportunity to try and change government policy, but it represents a key point of uncertainty. Now, the reality here is that the euro surged higher from the end of February until approximately the end of last week. And a good part of that was the unwinding of carry trades, and not least because of the commonality in the move with the recent strength in the yen. But the bigger point that we're seeing today is that investors are really just getting out. The underperformance of risk parity is going to result in leveraged positions being unwound and cash being raised. That is part of the reason why gold prices have been weaker in here, and they were down $63 in here today and coming right back down to the lows put in at the beginning of this month. The weakness we're seeing in gold is all about trying to raise cash to plug holes in other parts of portfolios rather than any real fundamental weakness in the gold price, and that is equally true of Bitcoin. The fact that it was down nearly $2,000 in here today is a clear reflection of investors looking for hard cash rather than holding on to even the most unrelated potential hedges. We are seeing, I think, the clear pricing in that we're going to have a recession. And when we look at the yield curve spread, at least the one that the Federal Reserve watches, which is the 10-year and the 3-month, it is now cruising through the 50 basis point level. It has been doing it in a pretty dynamic manner. And the kind of pattern we're seeing here is eerily similar to what we saw in the second half of 2007. So that is pricing in that we are on the edge of a recession, that it is no longer about the lead indicator for a recession, but that a recession is something that needs to now be considered to be an urgent reality. And that is not just for the USA, but potentially globally. The reality is that the only way to get a handle on the virus is to act early and act aggressively and to engage in a significantly exaggerated number of tests. And the countries that have done that have been able to take control of the number of cases. The clear poster child has been Taiwan, but also Singapore and even Hong Kong. And that is despite their the proximity to China. The countries that are behind the curve are France, Spain, the USA, the UK, and Italy particularly. What they need to do is to ramp up testing, to increase isolation, and then to plow resources into treatment. And if that can be done and the hit to economic activity can be tolerated for about 6 weeks, then they have a good chance of getting on top of the problem. And that's now what they're trying to do in Italy. But of course, the problem is that Italy's healthcare sector is already overwhelmed. Now, if health organizations are not going to be overwhelmed, then isolation needs to be the priority now. It should have been the priority a week ago, but the earlier the better. And the reality is that it's going to have to be implemented one way or the other. The only question is, how long is it going to last? And the longer it takes before isolation measures are put in place, the longer and the deeper the economic impact is likely to be. We have been in partial social isolation for at least the last 10 days. We're going to go full isolation in here today. And taking my kids out of school. The school has not yet closed, but it's inevitable. And I think that is something that is going to be part of life for at least the next 6 weeks to 2 months. When we then think about what is that going to do to the global economy, well, what happened in China is likely to happen for most of the rest of the developed world over the course of the next 2 months. So the first quarter is going to be disappointing in terms of economic growth. The second quarter is going to be a write-off in terms of economic growth. We're going to see a significant contraction. How long it takes to get a handle on this, we could be pushing into the third quarter. Now, when we then think about, well, where are the risks? What are the things that are likely to feel the greatest stress? Well, I think when we think about those, it's an easy question to answer, because we think about anything that people have been worried about over the course of the last year and simply conclude that the coronavirus makes it worse. So I'm going to list a few of them. I'm just going to devote all of tomorrow's commentary to listing off the sectors that are in the greatest peril right now. The first is that we're going to have an issue for banks because of liquidity. That will be partially solved by massive monetary and fiscal accommodation from just about every government. And it's inevitable that Europe is going to have to fall into line eventually. But they need to get over their hang-up with fiscal stimulus. So there is, obviously, Europe is a major center of a problem, and it's not exactly like we haven't been worrying about Europe for much of the last few years. Now let's think about Australia. The Australian stock market has been pulling back in an incredibly dynamic manner. The Australian dollar is at a new low. The property prices in Australia are still at all-time highs. Well, the weakness of the currency might help to flatter it somewhat, but the government is trying to introduce fiscal stimulus to support record high property prices against a background where the stock market is collapsing, the banking sector is under a great deal of pressure, and the export markets for Australia's exports are collapsing. So Australian banks have been trending down for nearly 5 years, and now they're accelerating lower. I think it is quite likely, I think it really has to be the base case, that we're going to get all the way back down to the lows in 2008. But the problem is that it might be worse than that if the property market pops. And again, these are things that we were worrying about last year. There was a meaningful pullback in Sydney property, and when we got to the kind of assistance that the government was willing to lend, it popped back on the upside, but it's quite likely to pull back again now as a result of the viral outbreak. So that is a risk that people have been worrying about. It's almost exactly the same for Canada, and the Canadian stock market has been pulling back in an incredibly violent manner. It's being hit by the fall off in demand from China, the lack of stimulus from Chinese students coming through, and Chinese spending, and obviously then demand for housing, particularly in highly valued cities like Vancouver. These are obviously clear risks in this environment, because the issue with the credit crisis was that it was limited to one sector. Right now, what we're seeing is a broad economic response to what should be a relatively short-term issue, in that it could last a quarter or two. But it is likely to put a great deal of pressure on leverage. The sectors that are obviously going to that have been stalwarts, really, have been the cloud computing companies. Well, Microsoft pulled back below its trend mean in here today. Amazon was also weaker, and it is potentially now on the cusp of breaking on the downside. And I think, considering the size of the dynamics, we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. And then we have Google, which is also under pressure here. What is, I think, underappreciated is the reliance that some of these companies have on income for their cloud businesses. The cost of setting up a new company and or the evolution of the unicorns sector has been driven by the evolution of data centers. It has massively compressed the cost of setting up a new company. But of course, what it means is that these new companies have had to pay out significant revenues every month for their cloud services to big companies like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. Well, if we're in a liquidity crisis and small companies and private equity funded companies are now trying to hoover up cash, well, when they start to go bust, then that is going to rob these cloud companies of significant portions of their revenue. And particularly for Amazon, where Amazon Web Services is the company's cash cow. And without it, it's impossible to make a profit. That is obviously going to have a significant impact. These are, I think, some of the issues that are arising. Now, when we look at the funding ability of some of the US states, well, they were having problems with the quantity of money that they had relative to their obligations, and that's been an issue that's been mounting for years. Well, yields have just started to rise, and that is obviously something else that is going to pressure the ability of funds of states to fund themselves when economic activity collapses. So this is an additional issue that we need to pay particular attention to, that there are going to be municipalities that run into trouble as a result of the response to the coronavirus. Then we have to also bear in mind that there is the fallen angel risk in the high yield sector. The high yield spread was updated yesterday. It is going to be closer to 800 basis points in here today and on par with the levels seen back in 2015 and 2011. But there is nothing yet to suggest that it is going to compress from here. So that obviously does represent a risk. When we look at the yield curve, it has contracted meaningfully over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I think it is worth looking at the fact that it became inverted first in the early part of, in September of 2009. But I don't have any data for before that. It became very sharply inverted still in 2009 when there was a lot of pressure on some of these businesses. The reality is that high yield is going to be under pressure and that there are a significant number of companies that are going to be downgraded into junk, and that is going to swell the ranks of the junk bond universe without necessarily increasing the number of investors who can in fact buy those bonds. So that fallen angel risk has now become a clear and present danger. So leverage ratios are starting to get blown out, and that is part of the reason why we're seeing this pressure on the financial sector and the knock-on effect on the stock market. What we also do know is that this virus is going to end, that the impact from it might be difficult to bear, and it is going to have an economic impact, but that the monetary and fiscal response to it is going to be overwhelmingly positive for asset prices once leverage has been blown off. That suggests that we're going to be set up for really impressive buying opportunities at some point over the course of this year, but perhaps not quite yet. India's Nifty 50 index has just broken on the downside. It is obviously responding to the pressure in other markets, but also to the fact that India has just had their first death from the coronavirus. And I think it's worth reminding ourselves that India has got a very underdeveloped medical system, and quarantining people is going to be extraordinarily difficult. The knock-on effect from slowing global growth is also likely to have an effect, and the valuation on the market is really very high, and particularly for the Indian listed companies that fall into the autonomies category. Nestle India, for example, would be a good example of that. Sorry, I need to actually type in the name. But when, for example, we look at the valuation on Nestle India, it's trading on an estimated PE of 72, and the market hasn't even begun to pull back yet. They're not yet willing to price in that there's going to be a significant economic impact on India from the coronavirus, and it would seem to be almost inevitable that that is the case, but simply with a lag in terms of its response time, that it has not been growing in India as quickly as it has elsewhere because it took longer to get there. That's also one of the reasons why the UK has not had the same response the same degree of outbreak that some of the countries in continental Europe have had. The UK government came out today and stated that they are approximately 4 weeks behind what's going on in Germany and Italy. Of course, what that also means is that within 4 weeks, things are going to be as bad as they are in Italy unless there is clear remedial action taken in an incredibly aggressive manner now. That is equally true of the USA, where it is looking increasingly likely that President Trump is much more interested in trying to get re-elected than managing this crisis. And the number of tests that have been conducted is inconsequential relative to the size of the current threat, where there are cases popping up in an increasingly large number of cities. So obviously, this is a situation that has the capacity to get worse before it gets better, and we are not yet at the peak in the growth rate of infections, and that, I think, is something that we do need to keep an eye on, but we're not there yet. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.